Welcome to my Bob Thurman podcast. I'm so grateful some good friends enabled me to present them to you. If you enjoy them and find them useful, please think of becoming a member of Tibet House US to help preserve Tibetan culture. Tibet House is the Dalai Lama's cultural center in America. All best wishes. Have a great day.
This podcast bonus was originally recorded November 2019 at the home of Robert and Nena Thurman.
This is Bob Thurman, and I am doing my bit online in this forum for the 24 Hours of Climate Reality project that is happening from 6 p.m. on the 20th to the same time, I think, on the 21st, 24 Hours of Climate Action. And my wife is a psychic and totally marvelous. And we came back from having to go somewhere yesterday afternoon. And she said, I think it was not quite evening yet. And she said, well, I think we should turn on the news. So we turned on PBS, and there was Al Gore, warming my heart with the governor of New Jersey, who was signing a big wind farm energy bill, the governor of New Jersey was, to produce some huge amount of gigawatts of energy offshore off the New Jersey coast. And big towers, they showed pictures of the big towers. And then Al got up and he looked really well and lively, terrific. And he was very energetic and he said, this is great type thing. And then he said, this is Pearl Harbor. This is, you know, Midway, referring to some World War II battles, you know. This is an emergency. This is 9/11, you know. In other words, all kind of things where people, you know, mobilized in an emergency manner, which is what those scientists call for, who are the 11,000 plus scientists that feed information to the Climate Reality Project, that feed information to Greta Thunberg. They call for emergency reaction to this. And so Al was congratulating the governor of New Jersey in that particular event. And the governor of New Jersey was saying how a previous target that he had set, or that the New Jersey legislature or whatever had set, of 3,500 gigawatt by 2035, something like that, of a renewable energy produced in New Jersey, was now upped to 7,500 gigawatts. And it was just going much faster because of the cost and the economic benefit and the amount of jobs created, which is the case everywhere where people really go and finally get free from the climate criminal propaganda. That is the petro industry people and their hirelings, like the current president. Al also did a wonderful thing where he said, in the next president, and there better be a next president, he said, since the present one is going in the wrong direction in denial of climate change when we're in an emergency and the planet is burning. And then he said, excuse me. And then he did prayer gesture and he was moment of silence. With real humor, with a smile. I mean, he's my presidential candidate. I urged him, and at the Climate Reality Project leadership training in Minneapolis in August, all 1,200 people present urged him with a standing ovation at even the suggestion, the thought that he might join the candidates for president as our climate president. As a climate warrior, everyone, Jay Inslee, everyone would be so happy. Instead of the leader, you know, a conventional Democrat who has already won an election, but was cheated, giving us the glory of the horrible invasion of Iraq and all the and the disastrous economic collapse that the Bush people delivered. Instead of that, he was the genuine president of in 2000, and we wouldn't have had this doubling of the ocean warming in the last 20 years. So I already did a version of the climate leadership lecture, which has been out for a few days. I had done it to be released this evening originally, but my assistant thought we should put it up, and so we just got it out there anyway. And I believe some people have been watching it, and I hope it will still be up there. I don't know how to link to it or what to say, actually, I'm sorry to say, but it's there somewhere. You can find it, I presume, through my website.
We'll put a link in the description of this video.
Okay, well, a link in this. And what I'm not going to do that again now, but what I'm going to do now is a little free form. And I have several inspirations. I was looking up the coal problem, and I went to carbon, a website called Carbon Something, and I was just looking for it here online where I found that website. And it's a carbon, and I joined it, and then now I forget how to get it, but I'll remember. And I'm trying to find where it is here. Carbon Brief, that's it, weekly briefing. And Carbon Brief, you know, it's an organization. Well, Carbon Brief is the news, but the science, energy, I got a bunch of stuff from it. And I got a picture of the number of coal-fired power plants in the world. That's what I wanted to add to the thing, to look up some recent research. And I think this carbon website is a website that is called Carbon Brief, and clean on climate, it says. And it's trying to... And I subscribe to that, and it's a good source of information. And they have a global picture of all the coal-fired power plants, and we've been shutting them down like mad in the U.S. And people have been protesting very creatively, the banks who fund anybody left who's trying to do it. And that, but now the big bunch of blotches of the big heavy-duty carbon coal-fired power plants are China. And to a lesser degree, India. But the real culprit here is China. And not only are they are decreasing somewhat their coal-fired power plants in China because they're choking themselves to death. They've been having a huge number of deaths due to the bad air, as they also have been having in India. And a lot of coal would be the major culprit, although there's other culprits as well, traffic and other things. But the Chinese... somehow, as a sop to the industry, when they're trying to shut them down, the Central Chinese Imperium, they are building them in Central Asia, and they're like trying to build them for elsewhere, for other people, as if it was a great thing, you know. And that's also maybe to keep their coal miners occupied and employed. They're scared of labor job loss and people rioting and freaking out because they have a very slim margin of survival, the main working people. Even though there are some rich Chinese people now, the still mainstream 800 million of them are still a little bit in the soup from week to week, month to month. And rural people are in a very difficult place, which is why they behave so insecurely, like with the people of Hong Kong, the Imperium does. When meanwhile, they're a huge, powerful economy and respectable. And if they were behaving nice to other people, starting with their own people, then the world would be happy to help them with their 800 million people, as we have been helping them, actually. They've been qualifying in the World Trade Organization as an underdeveloped country in spite of having a lot of billionaires. And we've been letting them get away with a lot of trade things. And Trump is not genuinely really going to change that. He pretends to, but he's, as usual, he can't remember what he's doing. And just give him a hotel in a capital city and he'll agree to anything, as we've seen with the Turks just now, where he betrayed the Kurds, you know, our allies there. So that's what I wanted to talk about today, was the coal thing. And then I want to talk more specifically about my bright money thing. And because I, not that I can do that, I cannot, but I want people to do it, someone to do it, and I think someone will do it, I'm sure. So I told Deepak Chopra recently, please do it. He said, oh, that's really the right thing to do. I told Al Gore about it in August during a reception, and he agreed that was the thing, that would be a great thing. And in a way, if he became president, of course, then that would be bright money, because he would have the government's money, and he could put some of the defense support budget, since that's our not, since our worst enemy is the climate, is the distorted climate. You know, my granddaughter is the wonderful Robin in the third season of Stranger Things, and she's shooting soon the fourth season. And, you know, there they're dealing with something that looks like a big blob that wants to eat the town, you know. And then the Russians are minking with it because they think they can make a weapon out of it, etc., you know. And it's a big blob. It was eating a mole in the third season, if you remember. And so they were fighting a blob. And so actually it's interesting that she came with me, by the way, to the Climate Leadership Reality Training, Climate Reality Project Leadership Training. And she is a leader, and she will, I'm sure. She's busy singing just now. But, you know, it's an interesting resonance that, you know, a community was not fighting the neighboring township. They're not fighting, you know, another country. They're fighting a blob. That in this case, of course, nobody knows where that blob comes from, but we know that the climate change blob, which is the carbon, methane, et cetera, blob, the global heating chemicals, they are a blob that we have created through the Industrial Revolution and through our excessive greed and our excessive anger, you know, industrial consumerism and industrial militarism, those two things. So that's everybody's international, interplanetary enemy. You know, Independence Day, okay, you see, you know, all those things, where the one where the White House sinks, you know, all of these outer space enemies, and that brings all the nations of the world who then normally are in conflict, you know, Russia, U.S., China, Ukraine, Georgia, whatever it might be, different African countries, instead of fighting each other, there's the one enemy that everyone has. And that's, we have that, actually. We have created it ourselves, that's all. So people pretend, and then we have a bunch of people who are making money by not fighting it. So they've been confusing the masses of the world about their real enemy for 40 years, which has to stop now. And we have to, everyone has to recognize it's an emergency. And that's the bright money plan, which we need. And also, so there's two prongs to the bright money plan. Of course, it's called bright money is the opposite of dark money. Dark money is not just the money of the Koch brothers, who were the major culprits in the book about it by the brilliant Jane Mayer, a research writer, nonfiction research writer for the New Yorker and for many important books, a number of important books and articles. But dark money really is the money spent by all governments on the planet to continue selling coal and oil and using coal and oil and gas and every other kind of dirty fuel that releases carbon into the air, and also promoting, you know, combustion engine machines and producing electricity. And the dark money is the subsidy given to those industries. That's dark money, okay, in a broader definition than just the Koch brothers in American politics. But the Koch brothers are archetypical in the sense that for 30 years, they have invested money in the government, in corrupting the government. They are libertarians by ideology. Most of them are, there's only one active one now at the moment, is the elder Charles. And they're actually libertarians, according to books about them, which means they're not Republicans, really. They're not just conservatives. People only say they're not conservatives. Libertarians are like anarchists. They're very radical. except they're powerful anarchists. They're not just bombers. They're anarchists who want to just control their own area and not have any government interfering with them, like Robert Barron or something like that, or like a duke or like a small king that just wants to control their own area and they don't want something over them. They want that, and they call that freedom, and they can create fake populism, and they can brainwash masses who are poor and are dependent on many things and who need the government, according to Mussolini. Poor people need the government to protect them against robber barons and corporate powers, you know. And libertarians don't want the government. So they spent that dark money brilliantly. You know, you have to hand it to them, to their genius, their skill, their bravado, and of course, ultimately craziness by destroying their own society within which they flourished, actually, which is crazy. But they forgot the resources of their flourishing, and they think it's just some oil, or it's just their own business, or their own ego, or something, and their own theory. And so they're into wrecking the government, which they've done. You know, they now have a regime. Luckily, they don't have the House of Representatives completely anymore. They still have a lot of people in the House of Representatives. They have a number of state houses. They have a number of governorships. They have the presidency and the executive. They have all the cabinet members, and they have the Senate. And they are still doing everything to wreck our democratic system. They're not trying to rule it as conservatives. They're trying to wreck it. That's what people don't really, the media will not tell you that. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's in plain sight, actually. They appoint everyone who hated whatever agency, Secretary of Energy, the Department of Energy, that is, the Department of Interior, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, whatever agency or department it is, they put someone in it who's the enemy of that department to then disembowel the department. That's their whole thing. And so that's the dark money. So the bright money is reversing that trend, because there are many people who have a lot of money, so much that they can't possibly spend it, some of them. They're, you know, there's an amazing figure I remember from the OECD, you know, United Nations Economic Development Agency, that in 1980, I think there were 17 billionaires on the planet. And now there's thousands of them, maybe 17,000. I don't know, I forget the number. At the time I remember that seeing it, it was like there's 7,800 of them. Many of them not American, actually. And many of them in so-called poor countries or developing countries, China and so on, India. Because of somehow the way that inequality has become hyper. You know, because of the dark money capture of governments. There's the OECD has a figure that the international community, not just the U.S. government with the subsidy that we give to our oil industry, which is 600 million billion, is by one figure, and it's trillion. It's like 4 or 5 trillion by another figure. When they calculate also the damage caused by the continuing pumping of carbon into the air. But just the plain cash subsidy is in the hundreds of billions. And then that's to US it's like 30 billion or something, straight cash. And then worldwide they calculate 600 billion. But those two figures go to 1.2 trillion and 50 trillion. You know, 50 trillion worldwide and 1-point-some trillion in the U.S. having to do with the damage caused by, you know, the pipelines, by the ill health of the people dying from lung diseases, asthma and things like that, the pollution, etc., the climate disasters and things. You know, when you add all the damage in, it goes way up, multiplies enormously. So the billions of dark money, in a way, they are taken from our taxes. Because by buying the congresspersons and the senators, and now the executive, they get these huge subsidies of $20 billion in the U.S. alone. Just figure this out. Anybody who thinks I'm a liberal or something, just figure out that your taxes are paying the oil companies to own, to make donations, campaign contributions back to the politicians who then write the bill that gives them the subsidy. And then they have a lobbying, you know, organization in Washington and in state houses that tell them their owned congressmen and women what to vote on and how to give them more money. And if they get $20 billion, they only spend $1 or $2 billion on their lobbying operations and on direct bribes, called campaign contribution, which are really bribes, to the politicians who then write them the checks, which was the checks of our money. Do you realize that? You realize how you're being cheated? Then you also, you yourself, have to go to the gas station and buy gas or call up for heating oil and, you know, pump carbon up while, in order to stay warm or to get somewhere. You follow? When you could be driving an electric car, you could be having solar energy and wind energy and hydro energy produced electricity. And, you know, you could have a job creating those things in case you are a coal miner or an oil driller. You could be producing solar panels and wind tunnels and electricity backbone grids and things and installing them and maintaining them. You could, if you're a construction worker, you could be having jobs weatherizing houses if that subsidy was moved over to renewables. But instead, you're paying the dark money people tenfold investment for them. They spend $2 billion to get the politicians first elected by brainwashing people with false media and lies on the media and their own propaganda station, Fox News, that they have, and other and people like Limbaugh and others who drive around in Maybachs while lying to you. They get paid for lying. And they do that, and then you're giving them money to do that. And then they get $18 billion extra under the thing that their resources are being depleted and their drilling equipment needs to be replaced someday. And then they're selling you gas and oil after that as well. So your taxes pay them to cripple your environment, spoil your air, pollute your water, poison your earth with poisonous fertilizers and things. And they pay you to be, and then they pay to brainwash you that that's all fine for you. That's a bad deal. You know. So that's the bright money thing then is to help people figure this out. I'm talking to a few hundred people here. And luckily, with the 24 hours of things, Al Gore and his people, who are much better than me, and they are transmitting more science than I know, and even than they know, but they're transmitting the messages really well all over the country. Please check in climaterealityproject.com and see where local events, live events in your area are going to be and in these next 24 hours. And you can look at my live version of what I learned from my Climate Reality Project training. But, you know, I don't show the slides because they're not allowed to be broadcast. But I give the summary of the process, you know. And so get clear about it and realize what a screw over it is, the dark money. And then the bright money is in order to magnify that. The Climate Reality Project should have a couple of billion would be fine. And this could be, you know, the Gates Foundation and Warren Buffett. Like Warren Buffett has pledged $33 billion. I don't know if he's already given it or whether he's paying it in installments to the Gates Foundation to do many good things. And I'm all for all of the things that they do. I'm not against a single one of them. But I think that they also, because of being tech people, they sort of think we'll muddle through, I read in Forbes magazine the other day about a guy called Arnault, who is a French mogul, who is worth $100 billion supposedly, of luxury products like Louis Vuitton, and you know I don't think he got Hermès, but all that kind of you know like super fancy luxury product lines. And he was saying he didn't like Greta Thunberg, poor thing, she had a problem and she was unhappy. Well, as he was happy, and she's a pessimist, and he's an optimist, and he was so dismissing Greta Thunberg's Paul Revere cry that this is an emergency, or the Al Gore cry that he did in the New Jersey News that my wife psychically knew was there somehow or subliminally. She denies that she knew, but she did. We turned on, there he was. My inspirer, my candidate, my president, my eagle, my American eagle, as she calls him, Al Gore. And he's saying, this is Iwo Jima. This is Pearl Harbor. This is an emergency. This is not eventually, oh yeah, imagine if Roosevelt after Pearl Harbor said, yeah, we'll get the Japanese invaders out of there by 2045. What would you think? Oh, 9/11. Oh, yeah, we'll deal with the Taliban and bin Laden and by 2050. I don't think that would be acceptable. Unfortunately, invasion of Iraq was a complete mistake. Actually, just so you know, I'm not a completely card-carrying thing. The driving of the Taliban out of Afghanistan in for about 6 weeks by empowering with targeted, you know, air cover, the Northern Alliance, the Lion Massoud, the wonderful Massoud, and the Northern Alliance, the Tajik people, to get rid of them and drive them back to Pakistan, where they actually came from, because it's actually Pakistan's invasion of Afghanistan that nobody seems to be able to tell you, the whole Taliban business. And we drove them out in a few weeks, and I applauded that. And I know a guy even who was with Special Forces helping that happen, and he put in memos and he put in reports as an expert on the ground about how to do it. And then he said, and by all means, once they're out of there, don't occupy the country. Nobody can occupy Afghanistan. If you try to occupy and land ground troops and sort of act like you're the new occupier in place of previously Russia, then the Taliban people from their base camps in Pakistan will be able to confuse the Afghanis that now you've invaded. And then you become the enemy as an invader. Whereas you're seen as the helper who helped them get rid of the Pakistani fanatics. Of course, there's a confusion in Afghanistan is that the Pashtun people, who are in southern Afghanistan, also have a part of Pakistan. That's why Pakistan is so engaged in it. Because the English made a line between Afghanistan, before when they had empire, between their empire and Afghanistan, they made a false line that was in the middle of Pashtunistan, which is the territory of the Pashtun people. So, you know, that was the complication. That partially comes from nobody understanding the false divisions and boundaries of nations by leftover colonialism. You know, that's another mistake. But the big mistake, even this guy told me, who was a special forces guy, was the stupidity of Cheney and Bush of landing and occupying the country. You know, that gave legitimacy then to the Pakistani-backed insurgency, which is what the Taliban is. It's not, the Afghanis are perfectly fine. They don't like, you know, the Pashtuns are confused because there are Pakistani Pashtuns and there are Afghani Pashtuns. But really, they just think of themselves as Pashtuns. They don't think that much loyalty to Afghanistan or that much loyalty to Pakistan. So that's why Pakistan wants to own the whole thing, understand? They don't want India involved or anybody else. That's why they never relent. But I just want you to know, Buddhist or not, the first, you know, expulsion of the Pakistan and of Al-Qaeda with the Pakistan was a necessary step, but not in occupation. And then on top of that, leaving there before anything was done nicely, and then we left there having done it nicely, and then going doing Iraq, which was complete just an oil quest by Cheney and Halliburton. It has nothing to do with democracy. That's all made up later. That was fake. That was a terrible mistake, and it's been causing absolute catastrophes for everyone in that region and for us. So those were the mistakes. So it's not like all black and white, you know. Anyway, back to the environment. The war in general is really bad for the environment. You know, you burn a lot of gas and oil, flying missions in the air and dropping bombs and burning things and dislocating people and driving tanks around. It's really terrible itself. It's great for the dark money people, though, because they like war. They sell more things, you know. They invest in weapons, which are great because you use them up and you have to buy more missiles and bombs. So the war is also really bad, you know, for the environment. And the environment is the catastrophe, not any other country and not Islam. Islam is not the problem. You know, Islam, the Muslims get more killed by their own terrorists than we did. They kill us. They kill more fellow Muslims. So if we weren't stupidly chomping around ignorantly, like the people have been doing, the non-elected people who have seized the government due to like sneaky vote stealing and Supreme Court corruption and things like that, if they hadn't been doing misgoverning, then we would not be having these wars. And we would be realizing climate, remember in the Clinton campaign, they used to say it's the economy, stupid, you know. So since 2000, what the world should have been saying, especially then, but actually since 1980, what the world should have been saying is the planet, stupid, it's the climate, stupid. And this coming election must be this, the climate, stupid. So anyway, back to bright money. So say that Warren Buffett, who say he gave $33 billion to Gates, and I don't know if he already turned it over. He still has another $100 billion or $80 billion. I don't know. He has a lot more billions. So those $33 billion, maybe three of them could go into the climate catastrophe. Now, what could we do with a budget of $3 billion in the hands of the Climate Reality Project? Well, my first thought was, we have a bright money media campaign on all types of media, social media, you know, television media, radio media, any kind of media, documentary, film media, to let the masses of people know in every country, in oil company countries like Saudi Arabia, we would broadcast in Arabic, obviously from outside the country, because we'd get shot by MBS, you know. He would shoot us, he would murder us, he would have us dismembered like he did to Khashoggi. And we couldn't, they're dictatorships, you can't talk to them. We would have Farsi, we would do it in Iranian language to Iranian people. And we would say, your enemy is not the Americans, the great Satan is not the Americans. The great Satan is not the Sunnis, not the Saudi Arabians. The great Satan is climate change. Iran has been having a 2-3 year serious drought in addition to sanctions posed by the foolish Trump, you know, pulling out of the nuclear deal with them and letting them have a decent life by not doing nuclear and acting badly to them and giving the excuse to that bad government to continue to suppress their people under the excuse that we're the enemy. The stupidity of Trump's people is incredible for doing that. And Bush too. The invasion of Iraq slowed down. Remember the Green Revolution they tried to have in Iran? The electorate, the people who don't like that government that much, you know, and they don't like the Majlis and the secret police and all that. Well, they tried. But then the fact that we invaded Iraq, that riled them up. And then they had a big enemy right next door. And then it was like back to their war like they had with Saddam Hussein. You understand, oppressive governments always have to pump up if there's an external enemy that's worse than them to their people, so they can be nasty to their people. They all depend on that. The Chinese make the U.S. their enemy, by the way, in case you didn't know that. You know, and that's their excuse for then arresting and putting their own people in gulags. So war doesn't help. Especially offensive, criminal, unprovoked war, like the invasion of Iraq. So anyway, bright money would broadcast in Arabic. And now Russia, unfortunately, because of being controlled by oligarchs, by the former KGB members, that they don't allow creativity to flourish, entrepreneurship, and a free economy. They dominated. And therefore, their one thing is selling their oil and gas. So they've turned Russia really into an oil export economy. So they've had been having a little bit hard time, oil and military and weapon export economy. Our economy has been turned into that kind of thing, too. Even Obama couldn't stop the drill, baby drill thing, even though he was trying to diminish. He got sucked into the dark because the dark money people were so badly pressuring him. He only had 2 years of full control of the government. And he did do something good with health, but everything has been getting undone gradually since then. And because he lost the Congress. And Bush went in the wrong direction. And then this guy is in the completely wrong direction. He's wrecking the country. So Arabic, Chinese, Russian, of course, English, German, French, Spanish, all the people in Africa. You know, the next door country is not your enemy. South Sudan is not North Sudan's enemy. Climate change is your enemy. You know, Eritrea is not your enemy. Ethiopia, climate change is your enemy. You know, they're broadcasting to the people. So it doesn't mean... It means then, even if it's a dictator, you better only have a dictator who makes climate change number one issue. We can't, it's not like you're not exporting democracy, you're just exporting that the house is burning and we all have to get together and change that so it doesn't burn. We can squabble about democracy and dictatorship or autocracy later. And then we have to do this now. And for example, China's a dictatorship. And they are doing the worst thing of increasing coal-fired power plants now, even pretending to join the Paris Accord. They're increasing the coal. Coal is 30% of the problem. There is no excuse for anybody to make a new coal plant now. Any bank that funds it, any engineer that works on it, they should all completely just stop. And immediately, whatever funds were to be put in there, put to make an equivalent wind, solar, hydro, whatever it is, conservation measures for electricity, they immediately have to put clean, renewable energy in place of that coal-fired power plant. It's very doable, and it's economically beneficial and creates more jobs, not less jobs. And miners, of course, who've had that as a livelihood, will be happy to get out of those holes in the ground that occasionally blow up and fall on their heads and explode in weird gases. And it's very unhealthy when they get black lung, and it's very unhealthy down there, and they're not treated well by their owners at all. And their money has to be spent. So if we had $3 billion, we'd spend $1 or $2 billion on the media campaign to get all the people alerted that they can only tolerate leaders, whether autocrats or Democrats. They can only tolerate leaders who are doing emergency measures to lessen the pumping of carbon into the atmosphere. That's the only kind of leader. It doesn't, in the American context, Republicans who want to do climate remediation immediately and go against the oil invasion, the oil money, the dark money invasion of the government, they're welcome. We actually really want them. We don't want libertarians to have continued to possess, demonically possess, the Republican Party. We want the Republicans to become true conservatives, and conservatives, of all people, conservatives should be saving the environment. Conservatives made all the national parks. Conservatives protected the Palisades from being blown up by construction companies, left-leaning construction companies who wanted to blow up all the cliffs there to make cement, to make more buildings in New York. And conservatives, wealthy conservatives, blocked them from doing that. And then Yellowstone and all that. Whereas these guys pretending to be Republicans are trying to like drill and wreck all the national parks. That's not conservative. That's radical libertarianism. It's dark money destructiveness. It's craziness, actually, is what it is. We like conservatives. Conservatives will save the climate, save the planet. They'll conserve it. Okay? So, but we would spend $1 billion. How about we spend $1 billion this way? That was one of my main points today is this. We go to the notorious Xi Jinping and his Standing Committee of the Politburo. and we say, look, who are building these coal-fired power plants and how many workers are out of work? Give us the statistics. We will pay them $10 million apiece to shut down that coal-fired power plant. And they can use that to help subsidize buying from you, from your other industries that are manufacturing wonderful, cheap solar panels, and to buy from you the factories, your factories that are manufacturing wonderful wind turbines, and then putting coal miners to work manufacturing, building more plants to manufacture those things themselves, so they're not out of work and creating a labor unrest for you. And maybe what is the price? We don't know. I'm just saying 10 million. 10 million into 1 billion is what? 100 million and 1 billion, right? A billion is 1,000 million. Is that right? I think so. In American counting, Western counting. In India, they have these crores and they have different numbers. So I think that's correct. So 10 times 100. So you would be able to turn off 100 power plants if the price was 10 million. And they can't just say any price. You can see what are the financial needs they need. They're investing already to build a coal-fired power plant, like maybe 10, 20, 30 million, right? You can't do that cheaply. They're paying coal miners so and so many million. So that money instead is paying the coal miners to manufacture renewable. And, you know, the young ones, the old ones can get a pension, paying for a nice pension. The young ones can be retrained, and then, you know, then they're going to need health things, you know, clean air. They could be sent to Hainan to go to the beach and take a break, you know, and be happy, grateful, liberated from their coal mines. And turn off all the coal plants and go to India. India has a big government bureaucracy involved in the coal industry, and they have left over from their more Nehruvian socialist days. And they have a lot of, therefore, you know, rice bowls, as the Chinese call it, involved in managing that, you know, ministers and things. And then they have private corporations and so on. But already in India, a gigawatt made from renewable is cheaper than coal or oil or gas. So they already, you know, it wouldn't cost that much. You give an extra million or two in India. So you turn off hundreds of plants. And if you need thousands of plants, and once people see you doing that, and they see how many tons, megatons of carbon are not being released, and mercury not being released to go into the Pacific Ocean from China, and create more terrible storms and disruptions and droughts in California, it's well worth the expense. And you know, the people who live in California have like 50, 100 billion, if they give a couple billion, then you could turn every single coal-fired power plant on the planet off within 1 year. Definitely, if you spend emergency billions like that. And then after that, they're making their own money with their renewables, and they're ready to help other people, and then you get after the oil, and then you get after the gas. And then we're ready by 20, you know, to meet the 1.5 degree, which is already a catastrophe brewing. But to meet that, you have to cut global emissions of carbon, gigatons, in half. We are doubling them, actually, by 20. We are now doubling them. The statistic that is in the Al Gore lecture that I want to underline in the other lecture that hopefully is out there for anyone interested who can't get to a local event. I'm not saying my lecture is at all better or even as good as the many local lectures that you may have in your neighborhood. If you look up on climaterealityproject.org, I think, not .com, .org, and you find out where is the nearby ones that are going on in this 24-hour of climate change activity, you'll find. So I'm not pretending that my little thing is better than them. It isn't. But I want to underline the one thing. The overheating of the ocean, where a lot of the carbon goes, majority of it actually, the excess carbon, since 1850, there's a figure. I'm sorry, I can't tell you exactly what it is. But, and then in the year 2000, there was a figure of the average temperature. And in the year 2019, there's a figure. And this is shocking. between 2000 and 2019 is an equivalent amount of overheating in the ocean as from 1850 to 2000. Okay? We're talking, dark money has seen to it that we're not only not slowing down the carbon pumping of you know, exaggerated industrialization. We are doubling its speed. 150 over 20 is more than doubling. 20 years, let's just say roughly 20 years, that's like seven times the speed of pumping than it happened in the previous 150 years. Okay? And so, and actually, we have to do the opposite. We have to halve the rate by 2030, not by 2045, not by 2050, not by 2100, by 2030. We have to halve the rate at which we're adding, because we're going to still be adding, but we have to halve the rate. If we could turn off all the coal-fired power plants, that would take 30% of the tonnage of carbon being pumped out of the air, plus the mercury and the terrible pollutants and a lot of the dirty coal that is burned in these third world countries, and China and India and so on. And then the China's clients outside of India, that they're outside of China, that they're selling these things to. And the money they're getting from them, we replace that money. And they build a proper plant for themselves and for the world. And they don't. And this doesn't head to California, their, that terrible 30% pollution. That's a step that would be worth $10 billion if you want 1,000 of plants to turn off. They're naturally happening in the U.S. because banks are backing off. Some of the private equity people are not backing off, and the young people have gone to them. And I think their children should be speaking up to the executives in those banks and telling them, Mom, Dad, stop it. Don't build any more coal-fired power plants. Spend the money, invest in coal miners having good jobs of doing other things. And the owners of coal miners can take a vacation in Florida. They can go to Mar-a-Lago and have parties with the ex-president. They're not worried. There's nothing to worry about them. They're fine. They have lots of money. They might be sued by the people with the sicknesses that they have not treated well as employees. That's too bad. Although even when we add a billion of an amnesty for some of the bad people, we're not out to punish anybody. But they actually should be the first. The dark money people should be the first to contribute to bright money, some of their own billions. Really, before they die, they should repent and they should contribute $5 billion out of their 40, 50, 60 billion that they have. Just five that they're not going to get time to spend anyway. They're going to die, and their ghost is going to go and be upset that they can't write checks anymore on their $50 billion fortunes. So while they're alive, they should repent and spend $5 billion at least on bright money. Now, if nobody decides to do that, and everybody just says, anybody who admits such a thing is scandalous, and it's crazy, and it's insane, and whatever they want to say, and then it's not an emergency, and like the guy with $100 billion there, he's saying he wants to sell some more luxury products to some people who are going to be in silk shirts in like high-tech, you know, hideaways with air purifiers and water purifiers and canned food and frozen meat, because everything is going to be polluted everywhere, and there'll be mobs rioting outside, and their own security people will not be reliable to not turn on them, actually. But they'll be in silk shirts, like Marie Antoinette was, if they keep behaving like this. You know, as the 2 billion climate refugees running around the planet, not, you know, climbing over walls because there's no food and no water. And their children are dying in front of their face. Come on. Nobody wants to be like that. Nobody. You started out like that because you thought, you know, this would never get that bad. But you look at the science yourself, you know that. It is getting that bad. Particularly California. I love California. I'm a New Yorker. But I love California, and there's many billionaires in California and Silicon Valley and whole thing. And, you know, then some of the nice ones who have a few extra billion more than they really want to have to worry about, they have already pledged half of it when they pass away to the Gates Foundation or some kind of foundation. But by that time, long before they die, their children will be climate refugees. They will be climate refugees. Some of that money needs to be put to work on the emergency now. That's all bright money means. And not even a high percentage of it, because there's a lot of excess money there. And they're not waiting for some people and vote, some liberal person to come and say they should be taxed or something. Like they were taxed badly during the World Wars, where you had emergency of an enemy, of a political enemy, cross a border in another nation with another language. But this is a different kind of enemy that can't be fought with military. Although actually military could do a lot. The military could go around, you know, if the military, I understand the military has game plans about what to deal with the $1 billion climate refugee, billion person climate refugee mobs that will be assaulting everybody. They have a plan. They were shut down by insane people like Senator Inhofe. And the dark money hired congressmen and senators and McConnell is cracked, you know. He's like, he's not going to survive very long. I wish him a long life, but even if it's long, he's already at an age where it won't be more than a few decades. And by then, they'll be, you know, Kentucky will be a complete mess. Droughts and floods and, you know, he'll be long demonized as a person who arrested positive development, and his name will be inscribed on the list of demons. And he could switch right now, and he could start passing some good bills. First, get rid of these climate-denying weirdos in the executive. Immediately. They could really all leave by next week. Like Nixon. And they go to Mar-a-Lago. No, we're not going to give them amnesty. Promise them amnesty so they don't fight like badger cornered in a cave, you know, or bear cornered in a cave. Let them go. We don't want to punish people. Well, some people. We just prevent them from doing more harm, as that's the whole point. Believe me, they'd be happy down in Mar-a-Lago. Not having to worry and fight with everybody, and not realize that people hate them, and because they've been harming them, you know, really. So that would be that's a bright money, and then, you know, reestablish the fairness doctrine to eliminate propaganda in our media, undo Citizens United, so that people can no longer buy things. Make government funded elections, you know. So that we can again have a democratic system, where people can have a say. Make it a matter of public service that the congressmen and senators have to be aware that they serve the people. And actually, with the modern technology, instead of Facebook publishing lies and propaganda and Russian bots and all of that, Facebook could be a wonderful thing if they also had a kind of fairness doctrine where you couldn't post lies. You can post opinion, but you cannot post unfactual things that you know are unfactual. You cannot. They are responsible for that, like any media company. Because they are allowed into, you know, remember that the internet was made by the Defense Department, DARPA. And the internet, therefore, is a public utility. And they have access, therefore, to people's phones and things through public utilities. So they're not allowed to deceive the people or allow their platform to be used to deceive people. That's just a fact. That's not some kind of a totalitarian censorship. That is simply science. You know, factuality, there's no alternative facts. It's all going this way anyway. And this what I'm saying about, will bright money will come. The majority of money on the planet anyway is bright money, actually. This is a desperate maneuver by people who are a little bit outmoded, their behavior and their way of life. You know, the excessive militarists and the excessive industrialists. are a little bit outmoded because everybody now knows everything. Nobody can pull the wool over anybody's eyes. My beloved Mark Benioff and his beloved Dreamforce that is also going on nowadays is making people's dreams come true by knowing all of your customers. If anybody in any oil company knew everybody who was using all the byproducts of all of their products, they wouldn't poison the fields with toxic fertilizers and weed killers, and which are petroleum byproducts. They wouldn't allow pipelines to ruin water tables. They wouldn't dump effluents into seas and things, and they wouldn't drill in offshore in ways that were, and then let it go out and invade all the oyster beds and all this. They wouldn't, because they would see what the effect of their thing was. It would be all in their face. And they would start realizing they're connected to the people who they supposedly are pretending, well, because I'm providing power. But power doesn't do you any good if this food is poison. And, you know, and if the air is poison, and if the water is poison, and the earth is poison, what good does it do if you have electricity? You can shine a light on you as you get cancer, or you get sick, or you starve, or you drink toxic water and chemicals in your water. The electricity won't help you. So the pretense in the energy industry that they are essential, that's wrong. New Yorkers can live without lights flashing all day, night, 24 hours a day in Times Square. Or the moderns can live without Vegas flashing, wasting electricity all like that. We can have street lights. Yeah, but we don't need a lot of extra stuff. So LED street lights, yes. So this is sort of what I wanted to underline here. Now the other most immediate and for sure bright money, where we would then have a president who would take this as an emergency, would be if we would draft and elect Al Gore. It would have been if we elected Jay Inslee. And I'm not against Bernie. I'm not against Elizabeth. I'm not against Kamala. I'm not against Buttigieg, Pete, Mayor Pete. I'm not against any of them. Marianne Williamson, I'm not against her. I'm not against Andrew Yang. He can dish out $1,000 a month to everybody. Fine. They should all be put in the cabinet, and they should be able to keep their points of view and try it out. Elizabeth, it fits with my dream team cabinet ahead of time, that you know what you're getting, American people. You're getting a good person in the Secretary of the Treasury, a very good woman, professor who has a plan for everything. But she's not going to be able to just do everything she wants, because she'll be cabinet. Even if she was president, she couldn't. And she will be, in a way, we should see them all as co-presidents. I'm sure Al Gore, if he was running, he would consider that all his cabinet members are co-presidents. And nobody could be surprised that some dark money representative would suddenly sneak into the Department of Energy, because he'd put Jay Inslee in there to start with ahead of time and say, this is what we're getting. And like, we could get your Beto back, and Beto could be interior, because he likes to run. He's a Texan. He likes to run around if he doesn't want to be a senator, which is probably what he should be. But anyway, first, you know, to get some more experience. Pete also could be Indiana senator to get more experience before he goes in cabinet. But if they want to be in cabinet, put them all in the cabinet and say, this cabinet is it. We're running as a dream team. We're not going to play some media game in a messed up media that's still hired by commercials from the pharmaceutical and the weird, from big oil, big medicine, big whatever, fertilizer, big, all the bigs. We're not gonna fight each other in that forum. We're gonna run together, all of us, to do bright money from the government level. And we say, I'm from the government. That's not the worst thing you could hear. That's the wrong thing that Reagan did that led to what we have now, this insane people. That was a mistake. He deceived you with that. He was an actor. The government is there to help if the government people are elected by you and not by some wealthy person who's bidding their doing. The government lately has been working for the contributors, not for the constituents. McConnell doesn't care what the people of Kentucky think or want. Has no care, you know, he only cares about his donors. Russian oligarch Deripaska, you know, that's what he cares about. You know, he cares about the people who are giving him funds because of the corrupt way that the government is run. That Elizabeth Warren is correct about that. As Treasury Secretary, she can see to that. Bernie is right, is correct about the health system is messed up. He can be Secretary of Health, Special Health Department of Health and Insurance. And I think insurance people have to get back to their roots. This is another thing, if you think clearly. What is insurance? Insurance is a brilliant thing from Ben Franklin's day, as early, or even earlier, where people get together to distribute risk. So it's a community thing where you pool risk. And you rebuild someone's house that burned, and they rebuild your house that burned, and you hope that everybody's house doesn't burn at the same time. So insurance is not there to rip you off and rip your neighbor off, and then maybe do a little repair if something happens. But mainly, their main job is to make more money for their own employees. That's not what insurance is about. It's a sort of independent corporation that's an acting individual in this false Supreme corrupt Supreme Court doctrine that corporations are individuals. So they're just using the insurance scam to get your money and pay you as little as possible. That's a complete corruption of the principle of insurance, which is a good principle. Insurance companies are good things. But their job is not to make money for themselves. Their job is to have a good staff that manages the distribution of risk among the people who contribute to it. That's what it's about. And in the process, so anyway, I don't, we get confused. People say, oh, they're being so mean to the insurance industry and they do so much good, the insurance. Well, sure, it's not an industry, really. Insurance is a social, safety net thing. And medicine is not an industry. Medicine is not a business. No one should be in medicine with the aim of making money. The only people in medicine have an aim of helping people, healing them, curing them. If they are successful in doing so, they will inevitably be given contributions by the people who they help and cure, for sure, because everybody needs help and cure, and they'll be grateful to them. In ancient Indian medicine, Hindu Buddhist, Chinese medicine, Taoist Buddhist, the primary motive for any doctor or pharmacist, or who have to be doctors actually, the primary motive is compassion. Medical school gives you lessons in compassion and empathy. And then they say you will be a successful healer, doctor, physician, pharmacist, if you love people and don't want them to suffer, and that's your motive. If you will, and then you will naturally be wealthy, you will have status, you'll be respected, and you'll be happy. But if your motive is to be respected and have status and be wealthy, and this is just the way you're doing it because people need medicine, then you're going to not be good, because you're always be looking to have people be more sick. So you will be able to make more money selling them something that will sort of help, but not completely cure. The ideal doctor would never see any patient because everyone would be healed around them. That's ideal for a doctor. And then you have to have a system of medicine where such a person wouldn't starve to death because they had nothing to do. So the point is, sickness will always be around, so that'll never quite happen. But that's the motive to be a doctor. And we have to get that motive back into medicine. We have to have barefoot doctors. We have to have enough general practitioners. Nowadays, anybody goes to our medical school, they end up being high specialists and surgeons and things to make money. And the people who are compassionate are maybe too soft, and they get washed out by the ridiculous 35-hour intern, resident shifts and things, where they get to end up getting really irritated by their patients, and they bond with the guild of the doctors, who are too few so they can make more money, so they become rare and precious. Plenty of people will be doctors if they're well funded, and it's out of love for others that they're motivated. So, okay, so this, everybody knows everything I'm saying, and nothing special about what I'm saying. What I'm saying is common sense. And I'm just thrilled and excited that Al Gore, when he was standing up there, introduced by the governor of New Jersey, and he said, this is 9/11. This is planetary 9/11. It's planetary Pearl Harbor. It's planetary Battle of the Bulge. It's planetary Midway. I don't know the history that well. Planetary Iwo Jima. Planetary Normandy. Planetary. You know, he's citing things in our history then. You know, planetary, the Paul Revere. He's Paul Revere. And it's not the British are coming. The British obviously are going because they're under confusion as well. But it is the blob, the carbon blob is coming. That's the warning. He's the galloping Paul Revere. The carbon blob is coming. Greta Thunberg is not a pessimist at all. She wouldn't be speaking and sailing and talking, even though she might get a little upset. How dare you when people remain unrealistic. She's just really a realist. And she never says that she knows everything. She just says she is sharing, and she wants people to pay attention to the scientists. The scientists' voices have been drowned out by dark money for 40 years. And we've gotten ourselves into this real emergency. If we had started, you know, heading toward renewables and helping third world people, you know, modernize in a different way, in a post-industrial way, not into repeating our polluting and destructive smokestack industrialization process, which is what we did instead. But if we had done for 40 years doing this, we would have been very easy and incremental, and it would have been kind of emergency anyway. Because it is an emergency when you're unbalancing your environment in this weird universe we live in, and on this tiny little beautiful, exquisite turquoise planet. You know, it would have been, but we would have made slow progress. We would have been more incremental, you know. So now we have to do it more radically. We have to transform it more radically because they have been, dark money has been confusing everyone for 40 years. And still, too many people are confused. So, of course, primary bright money is to straighten out the confusion by blanketing the airwaves with realism, basically. It's not the Gore doctrine. And that's why I love even this organization. I flipped. I didn't know that. I just thought I want to go be trained by Al Gore. But when I got there, I realized it's called Climate Reality Project. .org. Climate reality means being realistic. These people who, even though they might have billions, they become, that's one of the problems of having billions, is you tend to become unrealistic because you get insulated from association with kind of people, ordinary people. You sort of lose track. You don't go in the subway anymore. You're in some limo all the time. You don't hang out. You know, you don't share. You occasionally do, maybe you go, I'll never forget, there was a great picture once on Time magazine cover, 10 years ago maybe, 10, 15 years ago, of Bill and Melinda in India with Bono. And one lady in some one of those side, you know, concrete kind of little chopping things who was at, with a sewing machine doing something. And Melinda was sitting with the lady doing something, looking just fine. And Bill and Bono was looking a little like tired, like he'd like to head back to the hotel, but he was happy they were there. But Bill looked like, ah, because he was on some poor street in some country where poverty is widespread. And but he could have found them, I'm sure, in Seattle. I'm sure he can found them in, definitely find them in New York, Chicago, Detroit, no question. Plenty of cities and rural areas in America. But anyway, he was, the look on his face was like, oh no, where am I? What am I doing here? I remember seeing it. And I thought, dear fellow, dear Bill. Not anything negative. I thought, dear fellow, he is so lucky he has Melinda. That's what I thought. Really. She was sitting there looking at the sewing and seeing really what was happening there, you know. And we're all lucky to have her and him, because he has her. You know, we are. Okay, but you know, why am I the one has to think about bright money? How come they haven't spent $5 billion to match the dark money, those guys? You know, it's great to help some people in malaria and develop some new things here and there. That's all great. Sure, but how come they haven't straightened out the confusion? They're scientists. They're engineers. How come they don't want to straighten out the confusion? How come they don't see a path and see the emergency and want to straighten out the confusion of the mass of people? Why do I have to? I don't have a billion. I don't want one, actually. I actually don't. You know, I have a pension, and I'm happy with that. And but I'm not happy as a grandparent and a great-grandparent that I'm sitting around translating books in Sanskrit and Tibetan and where great things about meditation, and I'm meditating and enjoying maybe a little bit of retirement. I'm almost 80. I'm not happy about it, about the fact that nothing is, that nobody recognizes the reality of the emergency. Al does, Climate Reality Projects do. He's done that on his thing, and he's on boards with billionaires. But somehow even he has not thought to ask them for a few billion. Or maybe he has, and they said, no, I got to spend it on something else, or I got to save it for to buy another company or whatever. I don't know. I really don't know. I didn't discuss in that detail with him. But, you know, he now should. And there's two ways he'll get it. With the bright money, where some of the people who are giving away some of their billions later to see the reason and the, see the realistic nature of giving some of it now to it, not to be me, not to Al Gore personally, not to anybody personally, to the people, to create a message machinery for those people that counteracts the propaganda machinery that has them all so confused. That's one way. And the other way is elect Al and his dream team cabinet to the presidency and start the campaign for him to do it right away, not later. Do not by no means put someone who's going to be funded with PACs from the oil industry or the pharmaceutical industry or any of the big industries. That person might lose because people don't trust them anymore. And they might put an anarchist, crazy person, just to spite, like they did. That's what they did. They didn't, but they put the crazy. Actually, he stole the election, and the dark money machinery in Wisconsin and Michigan stole it. That I know. They did, with those Republican governors and stuff. They disenfranchised so many voters in Milwaukee and Detroit and stuff that their little margin of victory was false. And so actually, the more bright person won. But the point is, she didn't have a margin because she's not believed. And the false propaganda resonated against her. And this other guy, who is a, you know, conventional guy, he'll be there. That'll happen. That could happen to him. He'll probably win, but the margin, I'll vote for him, but the margin might be enough where they can cheat him again. And we have another crazy person. Probably by then a new crazy person, because the old crazy person, I think, is going to be on vacation. So anybody who is as unrealistic as to say that there is no climate emergency is not fit to lead other people and allocate billions of dollars in public funding. They're simply not fit to do that. This is the point of bright money, to make that point clear. It's not to elect Democrats or Republicans, or anything of the sort, or to, you know, put money behind this or that ordinary primary, because this is not ordinary times. This is emergency times. So as an emergency, there has to be a special campaign for Mother Earth, as I've said before. Greta Thunberg is her oracle, main one. Al Gore is also an oracle. and they should be listened to now. Worldwide, not only here, but if it switch, if we switch to listen here, if we triple react to the emergency here from the federal level as well as the different states that have done so, actually quite a few. So it's not like it's has to all be done anew. Look at the governor of New Jersey. Look, when I was there, the governor of Minnesota, he's on board. And I don't know how many, but mayors of cities and governors are on board. Bloomberg, he spent a lot of money on this already. He went to Paris and so forth. So has Tom Steyer. But they should do it not just for themselves personally to take office in a in the business as usual, any kind of business as usual government. They should support the climate emergency government. That's what we need now. And then when we're back on the right track and we have had, and we have to have the carbon pumping in 5 years, not 10. Because even at 1.5, people will die by the millions in Indonesia and in Southern Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, and in Latin America, and in our own cities, and our own poverty-stricken areas. People will be dying of pollution and tornadoes and cyclones and whatever, and droughts and things, and forest fires. There will be lots more paradises burning. So we have to, instead of, oh, yeah, we do the minimum, we have to do the maximum now. And it will be joyful and it will be economically beneficial. That's the key point. Everywhere where it's been happened, it has changed the economy to something more beneficial. More jobs, more prosperity, not less. The unrealistic business as usual is causing more and more suffering without limit. This point has to be made by the bright money media, global media campaign. Okay, thank you. I think that's enough now. And I have asked my dear assistant to make sure that the other lecture of mine is still live somehow.
It'll be linked.
Because it's not that the other things are not enough. They are. I'm not an important voice in the climate. I don't pretend to be. But I promised to do something during this period. And what I had planned to do didn't work out. So I'm doing it online. Okay? Thank you very much, everyone. And we'll be back to Buddhism. Oh, no. One last thing I wanted to say. Maybe you can cut a lot. One other thing I want to say. I don't know if you splice it in. I wanted to mention that my beloved teacher and dear friend, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, he's taken a Greta Thunberg pledge, I think, because, A, he's in very good health, by the way, and he promised his people, which includes some non-Tibetans like me, that he will live to 110 years of age, and he's only 84. So he's not leaving town like the Lone Ranger or something after having done a lot of good work in the last 60 years in exile all over the planet as a Nobel Peace Prize laureate and all that. But he has made a pledge not to leave India. So he doesn't want to fly around. He has flugscham, like she says, flight shame. Like Greta Thunberg does. He doesn't want to fly around. He wants to go some places slowly. And so I like that. And I applaud that. And he wrote, however, a book with Sophia Strill Rivere called A Call for Revolution, which is amazing. Actually, I don't know. Maybe he had heard of Greta Thunberg before he wrote that. Maybe they had. I had not. But it's written to Greta Thunberg's people, meaning young people who are born in the 21st century. And he's saying he has faith in them. They have to make a revolution, not violent, of course, but speak up, in other words. Speak to their parents and grandparents and people in the street and in the congresses and the parliaments, even though they don't have a vote yet. They have to speak. They do begin to have a vote in some countries, where there are votes cast, you know. That's 19, the youngest are 18, 19. And I'm sure they'd be happy to be joined by a few millennials or whatever you call people born in the 90s. But my point is, he calls for this. And it's like he has called, and Greta Thunberg has answered the call. She may not even know that he wrote that book. I don't know if she does. I haven't met her yet. But that's something Buddhists can look at. There's a great Buddhist leader calling for this kind of moral, scientific, and, you know, nonviolent, democratic, speak up, speak out revolution on the part of those born in the 21st century. That the business as usual is ruining many species, many human beings, many other animals, and the planet's whole functioning machinery itself. So that I just want to add that the Dalai Lama is there. Call for revolution. Thank you.
Thurman Podcast is published by Tibet House US, Menla Retreat, and Dewa Spa under a Creative Commons No Derivatives license. Please feel free to share, like, and repost on your favorite social media platforms. Hasidudek, and thanks for tuning in.